The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, it is. Welcome to a Wednesday, everyone. And oh boy, what a Wednesday it's been so far. I don't know about you, but I've been watching the televised hearings. No, January 6th, that start tomorrow night. So we're not there yet, but preparing for them, because today the House Oversight Committee had the second day of hearings on the Protect Our Kids Act. The Protect Our Kids Act is a package of eight bills, all dealing with gun violence, all designed to lessen the instances of murders by guns that are endemic in this nation. And I'm afraid what I just said to David moments before, he comes in here to tell me to break a leg before every show. And at that time I said, this country is irrevocably broken. It's broken. He said, I don't know that it can't be fixed. And I said, it can't be fixed. I've been listening to these sorry excuses for human beings in the Congress and their sniping and their ugliness and their nastiness. And there are 19 dead babies. And I'm sorry, fourth grader is still a baby. A fetus is not a child, but a fourth grader is a baby. A 9 or a 10-year-old, that's a baby. You know, I was thinking about, and I'm a mom. You can't help but think about your own children. I was thinking about Allison. When she was around 9 years old, she had to get surgery on her eyes. She had strabismus. She had one eye. It actually wasn't in. It looked out. And so they did surgery to correct it, to do something with the eye muscle. And I still remember the moment in the recovery room when she awoke, and she awoke in pain and she was crying, and I can still feel that. I feel that to the depths of my being. Again, this was, 13, 14 years ago? I still remember her cry. I remember her inconsolability because she woke up in pain. I remember how she held on to me. And then I think about the father of the little girl, Maya, who testified today, by the way. And he went to D.C. to be there today to testify. His daughter survived when all the people around her were murdered because she had the presence of mind to fake her death, to lie there, smear herself in her best friend's blood, and play dead. And not only for the 2 or 3 minutes that it should have taken, shouldn't have even taken that, law enforcement to come in and rescue her, but for over an hour, this little girl is going to have serious, serious issues that follow her around for the rest of her life, as is every other child that survived this, or Sandy Hook, or Parkland, or Columbine. It goes on and on and on. I didn't start with the song today. No. I figured I've played it too many times, and maybe it just loses its oomph. But I will tell you this. Maybe it's the movies. Maybe it's the books. Maybe it's the bullets. Maybe it's the real crooks. Maybe it's the drugs. Maybe it's the parents. Maybe it's the colors everybody's wearing. Maybe it's the president. Maybe it's the last one. Maybe it's the one before that, what he done. Maybe it's the high schools. Maybe it's the teachers. Maybe it's those tattooed children in the bleachers. Maybe it's the Bible. Maybe it's the lack. Maybe it's the music. Maybe it's the crack. Maybe it's the hairdos. Maybe it's the TV. Maybe it's the cigarettes. Maybe it's the family. Maybe it's the fast food. Maybe it's the news. Maybe it's divorce. Maybe it's abuse. Maybe it's the lawyers. Maybe it's the prisons. Maybe it's the senators. Maybe it's the system. Maybe it's the fathers. Maybe it's the sons. Maybe the sisters. Maybe it's the moms. Maybe it's the radio. Maybe it's road rage. Maybe El Nino or UV rays. Maybe it's the army. Maybe it's the liquor. Maybe it's the papers. Maybe the militia. Maybe it's the athletes. Maybe it's the ads. Maybe it's the sports fans. Maybe it's a fad. Maybe it's the magazines, or maybe it's the internet. Maybe it's the lottery. Maybe it's the immigrants. Maybe it's the taxes, big business. Maybe it's the KKK and the skinheads. Maybe it's the communists. Maybe it's the Catholics. Maybe it's the hippies. Maybe it's the addicts. Maybe it's the art. Maybe it's the sex. Maybe it's the homeless. Maybe it's the banks. Maybe it's the clear cut. Maybe it's the ozone. Maybe it's the chemicals. Maybe it's the car phones. Maybe it's the fertilizer. Maybe it's the nose rings. Maybe it's the end. But I know one thing. If it were up to me, I'd take away the guns. I'd take away the guns.
And then she got an email, and then she went to go lock the door, and he was in the hallway, and they made eye contact. And then she went back in the room to show us, go hide, and then we went to go hide behind my teacher's desk and behind the backpacks, and then he shot the little window, and then he went to the other classroom, and then he went, there's a door between our classrooms, and he went to there and shot my teacher and told my teacher goodnight and shot her in the head. And then he shot some of my classmates and the whiteboard. When I went to the backpacks, he shot my friend that was next to me, and I thought he was going to come back to the room, so I grabbed the blood and I put it all over me. And
what did you do then when you put the blood on yourself?
Just stay quiet, and then I got my teacher's phone and called 911.
And what did you tell 911?
I told her that we need help and to send the police in our classroom.
What Maya wants and feels.
If there was something that you want people to know about that day and about you, right? Or things that you want different, what would it be?
To have security.
Do you feel safe at school?
No, she's shaking her head no.
Because I don't want it to happen again.
I don't want it to happen again. Yes, she's shaking her head yes. Mia, thanks everyone for hearing her story.
Mr. Soria, you're now recognized.
Now, this is her father. Her father is there.
Hello, today I come because I could have lost my baby girl. She's not the same little girl that I used to play with and run with and do everything, because she was daddy's little girl. I have 5 kids, and she's the middle child. I don't know what to do, because I think I would have lost my baby girl. My baby girl is the world, not only once, but twice. She came back to us. She's everything, not only for me, but her siblings and her mother. I thank y'all for letting me be here and speak out, but I wish something will change, not only for our kids, but every single kid in the world, because schools are not safe anymore. Something needs to really change.
You think?
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and I understand you are now leaving. We thank you for sharing your story.
He flew to Washington, D.C., left that little girl. I don't know how he did it. Her testimony was on videotape, obviously done in her own time without people around her. I understand that she is afraid of men now. That poor little girl. Can you imagine what her life looks like? This is nothing new for us. You know, it'll be 10 years December that Sandy Hook happened. And 10 years ago, I was, well, doing this show, go figure. And I was filling in for Randy Rhoads a lot. She was syndicated by Premier Radio at the time. And on the 14th of December of 2012, that day, I was not on the air. At the time, I wasn't doing a show on Fridays. I was doing Monday through Thursday. And then the following week, actually the following 2 weeks, for the rest of the year, I was filling in for Randy Rhoads. So, well, so the next time I was on the air after the Sandy Hook shooting was that Monday. It was December 17th, 2012. And this is how that show started.
God has called them all home. For those of us who remain, let us find the strength to carry on and make our country worthy of their memory.
Oh, if only. Welcome to the Randy Rhoads Show. I'm Nicole Sandler in for Randy today and for the next couple of weeks. And Sean and I had planned on a couple of weeks worth of shows looking back on the year, sort of a celebration, saying goodbye 2012, bring it on 2013. And well, as Randy expressed on Friday, there are no words. And so for people who do what we do and have to talk, it's increasingly difficult. And last night, I listened to President Obama say the names of those 20 little children who were gunned down. I'll tell you, it's hard to hold back the tears. And one might say it's not good to hold back the tears. Let them out. And we'll play clips of President Obama's brilliant address last night. He said what we needed to hear from him. Now we need him to follow through, and we need to make sure he follows through. The problem is, follow through on what? What is the right thing to do in the wake of a tragedy like this? I don't think anybody has the answers. And the answers are multifaceted because the problems are so overwhelming. It reminded me, I think I'm a music person. I love music. And so I think a lot of times musically. And it reminded me of a Bob Dylan song called Everything is Broken. And that's how it feels at a time like this.
Everything is broken. I'll post that on the blog today with today's show. If you want to go back 10 years and hear how nothing has fundamentally changed. It's the same shit 10 years later. What have we learned? Nothing. And as heartbreaking as it was to watch that father there, at least his little girl is at home. He's going to be able to go home and hold her in his arms and comfort her and dry her tears and watch her grow up. That's something that the parents of Lexi won't be able to do.
Rubio.
Lexi Rubio.
Of Alexandria Anaya, best known as Lexi Rubio, and five other children who all attended Uvalde Public Schools during the 2021-2022 school year. Calissa, who completed high school this year. Isaiah, who attends Uvalde High School. David Morales Junior High. Jalila Flores Elementary. And our two youngest children, Julian 8 and Lexi 10. Who were at Robb Elementary. On the morning of May 24th, 2022, I dropped Lexi and Julian off at school a little after 7 a.m. My husband and I returned to the campus at 8 a.m. for Julian's award ceremony and again at 10:30 a.m. for Lexi's award ceremony. Lexi received the Good Citizen Award and was also recognized for receiving all A's. At the conclusion of the ceremony, We took photos with her before asking her to pose for a picture with her teacher, Mr. Reyes. That photo, her last photo ever, was taken at approximately 10:54 a.m. To celebrate, we promised to get her ice cream that evening. I told her we loved her and we would pick her up after school. I can still see her walking with us toward the exit. In the reel that keeps scrolling across my memories, she turns her head and smiles back at us to acknowledge my promise. And then we left.
Oh, God.
I left my daughter at that school, and that decision will haunt me for the rest of my life. So we drove over to provide her description. She wasn't there. My dad drove an hour and a half to San Antonio to check with the university hospital. At this point, some part of me must have realized that she was gone. In the midst of chaos, I had the urge to return to Rob. We didn't have our car at this point, and traffic was everywhere. So I ran barefoot with my flimsy sandals in my hand. I ran a mile to the school, my husband with me. We sat outside for a while before it became clear we wouldn't receive an answer from law enforcement on scene. San Antonio firefighter eventually gave us a ride back to the Civic Center, where the district was asking all families who had not been reunited with their children to gather. Soon after, we received the news that our daughter was among the 19 students and two teachers that died as a result of gun violence. We don't want you to think of Lexi as just a number. She was intelligent, compassionate, and athletic. She was quiet, shy unless she had a point to make. But she knew she was right. She so often was. She stood her ground. She was firm, direct, voice unwavering. So today, we stand for Lexi. And as her voice, we demand action. We seek a ban on assault rifles and high-capacity magazines.
Please.
We understand that for some reason, to some people, to people with money, to people who fund political campaigns, that guns are more important than children. So at this moment, we ask for progress. We seek to raise the age to purchase these weapons from 18 to 21 years of age. We seek red flag laws, stronger background checks. We also want to repeal gun manufacturers' liability immunity.
Please.
You've all seen glimpses of who Lexi was, but I also want to tell you a little bit about who she would have been. If given the opportunity, Lexi would have made a positive change in this world. She wanted to attend St. Mary's University in San Antonio, Texas, on a softball scholarship. She wanted to major in math and go on to attend law school. That opportunity was taken from her. She was taken from us. I'm a reporter, a student, a mom, a runner. I've read to my children since they were in the womb. My husband is a law enforcement officer, an Iraq war veteran. He loves fishing and our babies. Somewhere out there, there's a mom listening to our testimony, thinking, I can't even imagine their pain, not knowing that our reality will one day be hers, unless we act now. Thank you for your time.
And so that happened this morning. That was testimony in the House Oversight Committee. And the rest of the day progressed with just reprehensible, sorry excuses for human beings, fighting, saying it's not about the guns. Really? If it weren't for those guns, every one of those children would still be alive. Kim, that mother, would not be devastated. Lexi would not be dead. I, and Mia would be going to a play date with her friends instead of going to their funerals. Every one of them. I could keep going like this. I've got other devastating testimony. I also have Matthew McConaughey, who I didn't watch yesterday because I'm like, why is he there? And then I understood that's his hometown. That's where he grew up. He went to those schools. He played in those streets. And after all, it's very, very personal. Yeah, we need to vote them all out. Every last one of them. I'm going to play some of the Matthew McConaughey. I cut it down a little bit, but there's still a lot there because he said a lot, frankly. What do I want to share with you? I've got so much stuff here. You know, there were the comments from the members of Congress, like Senator John Thune of Nebraska. Now, remember, 19, 9 and 10-year-olds were murdered. We've also learned a whole lot about what these guns, AR-15s, do to the human body. And those little bodies couldn't stand up to it. Matthew McConaughey and his wife had a pair of sneakers, high tops, that belonged to one of the girls who was murdered. It was the only way her parents were able to identify her, because those bullets, they're designed to pulverize everything inside. So they go in to a head, to a human head. You'll see one hole. And on the inside, the force blasts everything apart. That's why the damage done to these bodies is so horrific. South Dakota. Thank you. Sorry. Whatever. They can't be fixed. They do too much damage. And that's why when you hear about the people who've been injured in these mass shootings by those weapons of war, they're not just injuries. They are devastating, life-changing, debilitating, lifelong injuries that they'll carry with them. So it's not only the mind that's fucked up, it's the body too. There's no reason for this. And what does John Thune say? Why are these guns necessary? These assault rifles? Why, Senator Thune?
In my state, they use them to shoot prairie dogs and, you know, other types of varmints. And so I think that there are legitimate reasons why people would want to have them. And I think the challenge you have already is that there are literally millions of them available in this country.
Prairie dogs and other types of varmints? Maybe the people in your state are using them to shoot those. But you know what? A BB gun could be used on a prairie dog or a varmint. A shotgun, which would put a whole lot of little holes in somebody, but not blow their whole body apart. It's just unconscionable. These people are unconscionable. Everything about them. There was a doctor there, you know? There is one doctor, one pediatrician in the town of, and I always, Uvalde. I always screw up the name of the town because it's not a town I ever heard of before. And you know what? If all things were normal in this country, we would not know of it now. We just wouldn't know the name of it because there's no reason to know about the town of Uvalde, Texas. Unless you happen to be a big Matthew McConaughey fan and you go, oh, that's where he was born and raised. No other reason you should know it. But this doctor, Dr. Guerrero, he's the only pediatrician in that town.
My name is Dr. Roy Guerrero. I'm a board-certified pediatrician and was present at Uvalde Memorial Hospital the day of the massacre on May 24th, 2022 at Robb Elementary School. I was called here today as a witness, but I showed up because I am a doctor. Because how many years ago I swore an oath to do no harm. After witnessing firsthand the carnage in my hometown of Uvalde, to stay silent would have betrayed that oath. Inaction is harm. Passivity is harm. Delay is harm. So here I am, not to plead, not to beg or convince you of anything, but to do my job and hope that by doing so, it inspires the members of this house to do theirs. I've lived in Uvalde my whole life. In fact, I attended Robb Elementary School myself as a kid. As often is the case with us grown-ups, we remember a lot of the good and not so much of the bad. So I don't recall homework or detention. I remember how much I loved going to school. What a joyful time it was. Back then, we were able to run between classrooms with ease to visit our friends. And I remember the way the cafeteria smelled at lunchtime on Hamburger Thursdays. It was right around lunchtime on a Tuesday that gunman entered the school through a main door without restriction, massacred 19 students and two teachers, and changed the way that every student at Robb and their families remember that school forever. I doubt they'll remember the smell of the cafeteria or the laughter ringing in the hallways. Instead, they'll be haunted by the memory of screams and bloodshed, panic and chaos, police shouting, parents wailing. I know I will never forget what I saw that day. For me, that day started like any typical Tuesday in our pediatric clinic. Moms calling for coughs, boogers, sports physicals, right before the summer rush. School was out in 2 days, then summer camps would guarantee some grazes and ankle sprains, injuries that could be patched up and fixed with a Mickey Mouse sticker as a reward. Then at 12:30, business as usual stopped, and with it, my heart. A colleague from a San Antonio trauma center texted me and said, "Why are pediatric surgeons and anesthesiologists on call for a mass shooting in Uvalde?" I raced to the hospital to find parents outside yelling children's names in desperation and sobbing as they begged for any news related to their child. Those mother's cries I will never get out of my head. As I entered the chaos of the ER, the first casualty I came across was Mia Cerrillo. She was sitting in the hallway. Her face was still clearly in shock, but her whole body was shaking from the adrenaline coursing through it.
Mia, that's who you heard testify earlier.
The white linen shirt that she wore was covered in blood, and her shoulder was bleeding from a shrapnel injury. Sweet Mia, I've known her my whole life. As a baby, she survived major liver surgeries against all odds. And once again, she's here as a survivor, inspiring us with her story today and her bravery. When I saw Mia sitting there, I remembered having seen her parents outside. So after quickly examining two other patients of mine in the hallway with minor injuries, I raced outside to let them know that Mia was alive. I wasn't ready for their next urgent and desperate question. Where's Elena? Elena is Mia's 8-year-old sister, who was also at Robb at the time of the shooting. I had heard from some of the nurses that there were two dead children who had been moved to the surgical area of the hospital. As I made my way there, I prayed that I wouldn't find her. I didn't find Elena. But what I did find was something no prayer will ever relieve. Two children whose bodies had been pulverized by bullets fired at them, decapitated, whose flesh had been ripped apart.
You hear this?
That the only clue at their identities was a blood-splattered cartoon clothes still clinging to them, clinging for life and finding none. I could only hope these two bodies were a tragic exception to the list of survivors. But as I waited there with my fellow Uvalde doctors, nurses, first responders, and hospital staff for other casualties we hoped to save, they never arrived. All that remained was the bodies of 17 more children and the two teachers who cared for them, who dedicated their careers to nurturing and respecting the awesome potential of every single one, just as we doctors do. I'll tell you why I became a pediatrician, because I knew that children were the best patients. They accept the situation as it's explained to them. You don't have to coax them into changing their lifestyles in order to get better or plead them to modify their behavior as you do with adults. No matter how hard you try to help an adult, their path to healing is always determined by how willing they are to take action. Adults are stubborn. We're resistant to change, even when the change will make things better for ourselves, but especially when we think we're immune to the fallout. Why else would have been such little progress made in Congress to stop gun violence? Innocent children all over the country today are dead because laws and policy allows people to buy weapons before they're legally old enough to even buy a pack of beer. They're dead because restrictions have been allowed to lapse. They're dead because there are no rules about where guns are kept, because no one is paying attention to who is buying them. The thing I can't figure out is whether our politicians are failing us out of stubbornness, passivity, or both. I said before that as grown-ups, we have a convenient habit of remembering the good and forgetting the bad. Never more so than when it comes to our guns. Once the blood is rinsed away from the bodies of our loved ones and scrubbed off the floors of the schools and supermarkets and churches, the carnage from each scene is erased from our collective conscience, and we return again to nostalgia, to the rose-tinted view of our Second Amendment as a perfect instrument of American life, no matter how many lives are lost. I chose to be a pediatrician. I chose to take care of children. Keeping them safe from preventable diseases, I can do. Keeping them safe from bacteria and brittle bones, I can do. But making sure our children are safe from guns, that's the job of our politicians and leaders. In this case, you are the doctors, and our country is the patient. We are lying on the operating table, riddled with bullets like the children of Robb Elementary and so many other schools. We are bleeding out, and you are not there. My oath as a doctor means that I signed up to save lives. I do my job. And I guess it turns out that I am here to plead, to beg, to please, please do yours.
Please do yours.
Thanks for watching our YouTube channel. Follow today's talk.
Well, would you like to blow away your dog, friends, kids, or maybe your wife? Well, go to the convention hall where a license and a gun is easy to buy.
That's right.
NRA says everything's fine. Get yourself a gun and have a good time. Well, go buy a gun, throw it in the trunk, pop a couple suds, get good and drunk. All right. In a mall or a town where there's people all around, you just open up and mow them down. That's right.
Know why?
NRA says everything's fine. Get yourself a gun and have a good time. Come on, everybody. Exercise your right. Then you get to playing God, playing God, playing God, playing God, playing God. Take the human life.
Go teach your son how to use a gun. Show him some down-home Christian fun. That's right. Praise the Lord. Then you pack it in his lunch so things get rough. He can leave everybody in a pool of blood. All right. Now your son can shoot like a man because
NRA says everything's fine. Get yourself a gun and have a good time. NRA says everything's fine. Get yourself a gun and have a good time.
Camille and I came here to share my stories from my hometown of Uvalde. We came here to take meetings with elected officials on both sides of the aisle. We came here to speak to them, to speak with them, and to urge them to speak with each other. To remind and inspire them that the American people will continue to drive forward the mission of keeping our children safe, because it's more than our right to do so, it's our responsibility to do so. I'm here today in the hopes of applying what energy, reason, and passion that I have into trying to turn this moment into a reality. Because as I said, this moment is different. We are in a window of opportunity right now that we have not been in before. A window where it seems like real change can happen. Uvalde, Texas is where I was born. It's where my mom taught kindergarten, less than a mile from Robb Elementary. Uvalde is where I learned to master a Daisy BB gun. That took 2 years before I graduated to a 410 shotgun. Uvalde is where I was taught to revere the power and the capability of the tool that we call a gun. Uvalde is where I learned responsible gun ownership. Now, Uvalde called me on May 24th when I learned the news of this devastating tragedy. I had been out of cellular range working in the studio all day when I emerged, and messages about a mass shooting in the town I was born in began flooding my inbox. In a bit of shock, I drove home, hugged my children a bit tighter and longer than the night before, and then the reality of what had happened that day in the town I was born in set in. So the next morning, Camilla, myself, and the kids, we loaded up the truck and we drove to Uvalde. When we arrived a few hours later, I got to tell you, even from the inside of our vehicle, you could feel the shock in the town. You could feel the pain, the denial, the disillusion, anger, blame, sadness, loss of lives, dreams halted. We saw ministries, we saw first responders, counselors, cooks, families trying to grieve without it being on the front page news. We met with the local funeral director and countless morticians who hadn't slept since the massacre the day before, because they'd been working 24/7 trying to handle so many bodies at once, so many little innocent bodies who had their entire lives still yet to live. And that is there that we met two of the grieving parents, Ryan and Jessica Ramirez. Their 10-year-old daughter, Alethea. She was one of the 19 children that were killed the day before. Now, Alethea, her dream was to go to art school in Paris and one day share her art with the world. Ryan and Jessica were eager to share Alethea's art with us and said if we could share it, that somehow, maybe that would make Alethea smile in heaven. They told us that showing someone else Alethea's art would in some way keep her alive. Now, this particular drawing is a self-portrait, all right, of Alethea drawing with her friend in heaven looking down on her, drawing the very same picture. Her mother said of this drawing, she said, you know, we never really talked to her about heaven before, but somehow she knew. Alethea was 10 years old. Her father, Ryan, this man was steady. He was uncommonly together and calm. When a frazzled friend of his came up and said, how are you so calm? I'd be going crazy. Ryan told him, he said, No, you wouldn't. You'd be strong for your wife and kids, because if they see you go crazy, that will not help them. Just a week prior, Ryan got a full-time line job, stringing power lines from pole to pole. And every day since landing that well-paying full-time job, he reminded his daughter, Alethea. He said, girl, daddy gonna spoil you now. Told her every single night. He said, daddy's gonna take you to SeaWorld one day. But he didn't get to spoil his daughter. Alethea, she did not get to go to SeaWorld. We also met Anna and Danilo, the mom and the stepdad of 9-year-old Maite Rodriguez. Now, Maite wanted to be a marine biologist. She was already in contact with Corpus Christi University of A&M for her future college enrollment. 9 years old. Maite cared for the environment so strongly that when the city asked her mother if they could release some balloons into the sky in her memory, her mom said, oh no, Maite wouldn't want to litter. Maite wore green high-top Converse with a heart she had hand-drawn on the right toe because they represented her love of nature. Camilla's got these shoes. Can you show these shoes, please? Wore these every day. Green Converse with a heart on the right toe. These are the same green Converse on her feet that turned out to be the only clear evidence that could identify her after the shooting. How about that? Maite wrote a letter. Her mom said if Maite's letter could help someone accomplish her dream, that then her death would have an impact, and it would mean her dying had a point and wasn't pointless, that it would make the loss of her life matter. The letter reads, marine biologist, I want to pass school to get to my dream college. My dream college is in Corpus Christi by the ocean. I need to live next to the ocean because I want to be a marine biologist. marine biologist, study animals and the water. Most of the time I will be in a lab. Sometimes I will be on TV. Then there was Ellie Garcia, a 10-year-old, and her parents, Stephen and Jennifer. Ellie loved to dance and she loved church. She even knew how to drive tractors and was already working with her dad and her uncle mowing yards. Ellie was always giving of her gifts, her time, even half-eaten food on her plate, they said. Said around the house, we called her the great re-gifter. Smiling through tears, her family told us how Ellie loved to embrace, said she was the biggest hugger in the family. Now, Ellie was born Catholic, but had been going to Baptist church with her uncle for the last couple of years. Her mom and dad were proud of her because they said she was learning to love God no matter where. The week prior to her passing, she'd been preparing to read a verse from the Bible for the next Wednesday night's church service. The verse was from Deuteronomy 6:5. And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. That's who Ellie was becoming. But she never got to read it. Service on that Wednesday night. Then there was a fairy tale love story of a teacher named Irma and her husband Joe. What a great family this was. This was an amazing family. Camilla and I, we sat with about 20 of their family members in their living room, along with their four kids. Kids were 23, 19, 15, and 13. They shared all these stories about how Irma and Joe served the community and would host all these parties, and how Irma and Joe were planning on getting a food truck together when they soon retired. They were humble, hard-working people. Irma was a teacher who, her family said, went above and beyond and just couldn't say no to any kind of teaching. Joe had been commuting to and from work 70 miles away in Del Rio for years. Together, they were the glue of the family. Both worked overtime to support their four kids. Irma even worked every summer when school was out. The money she had made two summers ago paid to paint the front of the house. The money she made last summer paid to paint the sides of the house. This summer's work was going to pay to paint the back of the house. Because Irma was one of the teachers who was gunned down in the classroom. Joe, her husband, literally died of heartache the very next day when he had a heart attack. They never got to paint the back of their house. They never got to retire. And they never got to get that food truck together. We also met a cosmetologist. Right, she was well-versed in mortuary makeup. That's the task of making the victims appear as peaceful and natural as possible for their open casket viewings. These bodies were very different. They needed much more than makeup to be presentable. They needed extensive restoration. Why? Due to the exceptionally large exit wounds of an AR-15 rifle. Most of the body is so mutilated that only DNA test or green Converse could identify them. Many children were left not only dead, but hollow. So yes, counselors are going to be needed in Uvalde for a long time. Counselors are needed in all these places where these mass shootings have been for a long time. I was told by many that it takes a good year before people even understand what to do next. And even then, when they become secure enough to take the first step forward, a lifetime is not going to heal those wounds. But again, you know what every one of these parents wanted, what they asked us for? What every parent separately expressed in their own way to Camilla and me? That they want their children's dreams to live on. That they want their children's dreams to continue to accomplish something after they are gone. They want to make their loss of life matter. Look, we heard from so many people, right? Families of the deceased, mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, Texas Rangers, hunters, Border Patrol, and responsible gun owners who won't give up their Second Amendment right to bear arms. And you know what they all said? We want secure and safe schools, and we want gun laws that won't make it so easy for the bad guys to get these damn guns.
So, get rid of the guns.
We know it's on the table. We need to invest in mental health care. We need safer schools. We need to restrain sensationalized media coverage. We need to restore our family values. We need to restore our American values. And we need responsible gun ownership. Responsible gun ownership. We need background checks. We need to raise the minimum age to purchase an AR-15 rifle to 21. We need a waiting period for those rifles. We need red flag laws and consequences for those who abuse them.
You think?
These are reasonable, practical, tactical regulations to our nation, states, communities, schools, and homes. Responsible gun owners are fed up with the Second Amendment being abused and hijacked by some deranged individuals. These regulations are not a step back. They're a step forward for a civil society and the Second Amendment. Look, is this a cure-all? Hell no. But people are hurting. Families are. Parents are. And look, as divided as our country is, this gun responsibility issue is one that we agree on more than we don't.
That's true.
It really is. Look, this should be a nonpartisan issue.
You think?
This should not be a partisan issue. There is not a Democratic or Republican value in one single act of these shooters. It's not. But people in power have failed to act. So we're asking you, and I'm asking you, will you please ask yourselves, can both sides rise above?
I don't know.
Can both sides see beyond the political problem at hand?
Probably not.
That we have a life preservation problem on our hands.
We can. They can't.
We have a chance right now to reach for and to grasp a higher ground above our political affiliations. A chance to make a choice that does more than protect your party. A chance to make a choice that protects our country now and for the next generation. We got to take a sober, humble, and honest look in the mirror and rebrand ourselves based on what we truly value. What we truly value. We got to get some real courage and honor our immortal obligations instead of our party affiliations. Enough with the counterpunching. Enough of the invalidation of the other side.
Too bad it's mostly coming from one side.
The American people. Find a middle ground. The place where most of us Americans live anyway. Especially on this issue. Because I promise you, America, you and me, we are not as divided as we were being told we are.
That I don't agree with. We are.
No.
We are.
How about we get inspired? Give ourselves just cause to revere our future again. Maybe set an example for our children. Give us reason to tell them, hey, listen and watch these men and women. These are great American leaders right here. Hope you grow up to be like them. And let's admit it. We can't truly be leaders if we're only living for re-election. Let's be knowledgeable and wise and act on what we truly believe. Again, we got to look in the mirror, lead with humility, and acknowledge the values that are inherent to, but also above politics. We got to make choices, make stands, embrace new ideas, and preserve the traditions that can create true, true progress for the next generation. With real leadership, let's start giving us, all of us with real leadership, let's start giving all of us good reason to believe that the American dream is not an illusion.
Yes, it
is. So where do we start? We start by making the right choices on the issue that is in front of us today. We start by making laws that save innocent lives and don't infringe on our Second Amendment rights.
Well, screw your Second Amendment
right
rights. I'm sorry. Enough already.
To pass policies that can keep us from having as many Columbine, Sandy Hooks, Parklands, Las Vegas's, Buffaloes, and Uvaldes from here on. We start by giving Alethea a chance to be spoiled by her dad. Start by giving Mayday a chance to become a marine biologist. Start by giving Ellie a chance to read her Bible verse at the Wednesday night service. Start by giving Irma and Joe a chance to finish painting their house. Maybe retire, get that food truck. We start by giving McKenna, Layla, Miranda, Nevaeh, Jose, Javier, Tess, Rogelio, Eliana, Annabelle, Jackie, Azuya, JC, Jayla, Ava, Amory, and Lexi. We start by giving all of them our promise that their dreams are not going to be forgotten. We start by making the loss of these lives matter.
Good idea. That's Matthew McConaughey speaking at the White House yesterday. I agree with the overwhelming amount of what he said, most of it. And it was hard to listen to. What I don't agree with is our Second Amendment rights. Fuck your Second Amendment rights. Your Second Amendment rights say a well-regulated militia. That's what you need to know. The National Guard. You want a gun? Join the National Guard in your state, and you can have a gun while you're on duty. David.
With all due respect to Matthew McConaughey, fuck this mental illness bullshit, and we need to call out anyone and everyone that mentions that term. And here's why. In case people listening to this have forgotten,
Ronald Reagan?
There is video of the lard father gleefully signing an executive order to make it easier, not harder, easier for mentally ill people to get guns.
Right. So you're talking about the former guy who did that, made it easier for mentally ill people to get guns. And their godfather, Ronald Reagan, is the guy who emptied out the state mental hospitals. That's where the problem began. Just saying. Put the blame where it belongs.
And fuck everyone who stood behind him and said, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
This is great.
All of them. All of them. All right. So I played for you the clips that I thought we all need to see. There were other people. It wasn't only the Democrats who called witnesses yesterday and today. There was a woman from the Heritage Foundation. Her name was, it was something that made, was appropriate for her. It was like Miss Murdley or something. Miss Swearer. I got a few swear words for her. I'm not going to play much of this, but just to give you an idea of who this piece of shit is, let me just play the beginning of her 5-minute statement. I will not waste 5 minutes on this sorry excuse for a human being. but just to give you the gist
State
of it.
Foundation, where my scholarship focuses on the Second Amendment and gun violence prevention. I've testified before various legislatures after several mass shootings, Parkland, Virginia Beach, El Paso.
Yeah, you're the one they trot out.
Too many others. And I hope to God this is the last time I ever have to testify before
I hope
a legislative
so too.
Body after a mass shooting again. I fear that it won't be. And I fear that it won't be because the conversation has become predictable. An unspeakably horrific event like Uvalde or Buffalo happens, reflexively, almost compulsively, come calls for Congress to pass a whole host of gun control measures, largely targeting peaceable, law-abiding citizens.
No, largely targeting pieces of shit who go around killing people. Enough. I just...
The effectiveness
yeah.
of any of these policies.
All right, I'm going to shut her up.
Immediately framed as callous obstructionist.
You are a callous obstructionist. Okay, so swearer, just to give you an idea, she was combative from the get-go. She answered questions that weren't asked of her, and she constantly, consistently spoke over the Democrats when they were questioning her. For example, here's Katie Porter, who had a few words to say to Miss Swearer. Here we go, Katie.
Claimed her time. So you knew that the bill, you said yes in response to my question, that you knew the bill would allow the gun owner to maintain possession of any semi-automatic assault weapon that was lawfully possessed before the bill becomes law. Ms. Swearer, I respect that we have different opinions on Representative Cicilline's assault weapons law, but we cannot have different facts. We have a duty to debate the merits of proposal. You falsely testified under oath.
Would you
that
like
that
the
bill,
explanation of
no,
why
I will
I said
not.
That?
I have not yielded, Ms. Swearer.
Suspend. Madam Chair, if she's going to ask questions,
no,
shouldn't she
up.
Let the witness have time to answer?
The gentleman is not recognized. You falsely testified under oath.
Madam Chair, point of order. Point of order.
What is the gentleman's point?
I've been
of
accused of falsely testifying under oath. I would like to address it.
Shut
the
up!
The gentlewoman has accused
she's
her
not a gentlewoman.
Is she going to hold to
well,
that?
Well, Katie
or are
is,
you
but she's
allow
not.
The witness to respond to that accusation of criminal conduct?
You have not come forward with a significant point of order.
No, she hasn't. He hasn't. Okay, so next part. Because it continues right here.
Asked you if that bill was correct, if the bill would allow any gun owner to maintain possession, and you said yes, yet you testified that the bill would allow people to become felons overnight. Earlier today, you testified that you hoped that this was the last time you testified before Congress.
We
for
do
the sake
too.
Of our nation and the integrity of this Congress,
I said
I
Congress
do too.
After a mass shooting, trying to figure out how to solve a problem that we are all heavily invested in solving.
Ms. Swearer,
that is
I have not
insulting.
Asked
point of order. Point of
question.
Order.
How dare you?
Reclaiming
how dare
my
you?
Time.
Whoa.
How dare
how
you?
How dare you?
Misstate the law.
How dare you
at
ask
legislation.
Questions that you do not even want an answer
oh
to?
Oh, my God.
Ms. Swearer, I'm moving on.
Ms. Swearer.
I'm a lifelong consumer.
Go, what, Ms. Swearer, I got a little song for you.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, because nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
Unfortunately, she didn't shut the fuck up, and she wasn't alone. I gotta play one last clip for you, and maybe I'll preface it with this.
Hold on a second. We're getting more breaking news. Okay, this is just in. Is this confirmed? He's just confirmed it. Louis Gohmert remains the dumbest man alive.
Yeah.
We have a two-tier justice system. If you're a Republican, you can't even lie to Congress.
No, you can't.
Or lie to an FBI agent.
No, you can't. But that I played you that one yesterday. That wasn't the one that I wanted to play for you today. He was, this was it. Sorry. Here we go. This is Louis Gohmert today.
Last week and even today.
Yeah.
To be told that we have no courage.
Yeah.
That Democrats, we were told in debate last week, don't want to hear any more about social media, violent video games, Hollywood, mental illness.
Nope.
And they sure don't want to hear any more about prayers. They're
not from you.
Hearing about prayers. Don't want to hear any more about fatherlessness, drug use. Look, Maybe if we heard more prayers from leaders of this country instead of taking God's name in vain, we wouldn't have the mass killings like we didn't have before.
We need more thoughts and prayers, huh?
From school.
Is that what
he's
saying?
And it's not like we're not.
It's we need more thoughts and prayers? Is that what Louis's saying? More thoughts and prayers, huh?
Thank you.
Okay. Well, in that case,
the gentleman at microphone 1A.
Thank you.
Thoughts and prayers.
My name is Jason Selvig, and I'm from West Palm Beach, Florida. And I would like to say that I am sick and tired of the left-wing media, and frankly, people in this room today spreading misinformation about Wayne LaPierre. Whenever there's a mass shooting, they all say that Wayne LaPierre isn't doing enough to stop these mass shootings, and even implying that Wayne LaPierre has played a part in making it easier for these shooters to get guns, to get weapons. You heard it after Las Vegas. You heard it after Pulse nightclub in Orlando. You heard it after Columbine. You heard it after Parkland. You heard it after Virginia Tech. You heard it after Sandy Hook. You heard it after El Paso. You heard it after Buffalo. You kept hearing that Wayne LaPierre isn't doing enough. And frankly, that's not true. The NRA, under Wayne LaPierre's leadership, has provided thoughts
and
prayers to the victims and their families. And maybe these mass shootings would stop happening if we all thought a little bit more.
And prayed a little bit more.
A little bit more.
There you go.
So I'm asking everyone in this room to think.
Think and pray.
To pray. Give your thoughts and your prayers and your thoughts and your prayers.
And your
and
thoughts.
Your prayers and your
prayers.
Thoughts.
Yeah.
And if we give enough of these thoughts and these prayers, these mass shootings will stop. So I want to thank you, Wayne LaPierre, for all your thoughts.
And all,
and
your,
all your
prayers.
Prayers. Thank you.
Now that is an American. The Good Liars. Yes, I'm going to be reaching out to the Good Liars. All right. Let me just wrap things up by saying, I've never been so happy that my child is no longer in school, that my daughter is now a young adult. She's 23 years old, and she's done with school. But I'll leave you with this to show you just how close we all come. As Allison was finishing up high school, she was a lousy student. She'll be the first to tell you that. She hated school. She's very bright. Very smart, doesn't like people telling her what to do, was not a good student, didn't like school. Therefore, she's coming up to the end of her senior year, and she's, I think, 2.5 credits shy of graduating, and it's looking like she's not going to pass. So the school has another option, and they usually use it for kids who have behavioral problems. It's called the Off-Campus Learning Center, OCLC. And basically, they get to complete the courses they need to complete at their own pace, working on the computer, but they do it at a centralized location. They have all the area high schools feed into one off-campus learning center where the kids sit on the computers and do their work at their own pace. They finish what they have to finish so they can get done. So Allison spent her last 2 months or so of senior year at this place, finishing up her last 2.5 credits. And she did, and it was good for her. That's what she needed. The following year is when the shooting in Parkland happened. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School is one of our 4 high schools in this area. Yeah, this is a pretty populated region. We have Coral Glades High School, which is where she went. They have Terravella, which is where the OCLC was. They have Coral Springs High School and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas are 4 high schools. Kids from Parkland and Coral Springs go to both, go to all. When the shooting happened at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, we're having dinner one night and they show the murderer's picture on the television. And Allison sees him and says, oh my God, I know him. He sat right by me in the OCLC. That kid, that murderer, was as close as I am to this computer screen from my child months before he did this. If I tell you that my stomach churns and churns and every bit of horror that those parents felt coursed through my body every time I think of that, when I hear that man's name, and no, I don't say it, but I can picture him. And I know that my kid can picture him even more, sitting two seats away from her in this classroom. Nobody is safe. Nobody is safe. Yeah, I'm glad my kid's not in school now, but you know what? She goes to work every day. She went out to the movies the other night. She goes out and sees people. She could be shot anytime, as could any of us. If it were up to me, I'd take away the guns. I'd take away the fucking guns. I'll see you tomorrow, everyone. I'll leave you with the news.
I'll tell you one.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The 2022 primary season is in full swing. Tuesday, seven states went to the polls: California, Iowa, Montana, New Mexico, South Dakota, New Jersey, and Mississippi. Rising concerns about crime and homelessness seem to have dominated in California. San Francisco voters recalled District Attorney Chesa Boudin. And in the Los Angeles mayor's race, Democratic Congresswoman Karen Bass and real estate developer billionaire Rick Caruso will advance to a November runoff. Bass, a longtime Democratic lawmaker who was on President Biden's shortlist for a running mate in 2020, could make history as the first woman and the first black woman to lead America's second largest city. But she's got to win first. In House primaries across the country, Republicans largely kept incumbents, rejecting challenges from candidates who attempted to align themselves more closely with the former guy. And it gets worse for him. Five of the 35 House Republicans who voted in favor of the January 6th commission faced primary challenges yesterday. Four of them survived, calling into question Trump's clout. But it was also a tough primary day for progressives in California, where I mentioned San Francisco district attorney has been ousted with 60% of the vote in a recall election. The race bankrolled by conservative donors and Democrats who've been on the defense over the rise in crime in the state, even in very blue areas. The House today will vote on a package of gun bills, the Protect Our Children Act, that passed the House Judiciary Committee last week. The bills in this package range from lifting the age to purchase and a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines and another requiring safe storage of firearms. The House is voting on it, though most of the provisions have no chance of passing the Senate. Meanwhile, a bipartisan group of senators are still working, trying to eke out a more limited compromise bill, even as some gun rights groups target Senate Republicans that are willing to compromise with Democrats. Actor Matthew McConaughey visited the White House on Tuesday to meet with the president and deliver an impassioned speech in support of gun reform from the James Brady White House briefing room. In case you didn't know, that room was named for Reagan's press secretary who was severely injured in the assassination attempt on Reagan. The shooter, by the way, was just unconditionally released from prison after serving his time for his attempt on the president's life. Anyway, back to the news. McConaughey is from Uvalde, Texas. That gave him standing to deliver those remarks and recount stories about the shooting victims after meeting with their families. Although the number of senators moving toward a possible gun deal is growing, it's still a very heavy lift, both sides admitting there's far more work to do to reach a consensus on the issue, and any changes to gun laws will be met with stiff Republican resistance. And as we await the Supreme Court decision on these highly polarizing topics, including abortion and gun rights, feds are increasingly concerned about an increase in domestic extremist threats. The Department of Homeland Security on Tuesday issuing a warning covering the next 6 months as midterm elections, the potential likely downfall of Roe v. Wade, and surging migration at the southern border exacerbate tensions nationwide. DHS warning that the U.S. is already in a heightened threat environment and said, quote, in the coming months, we expect the threat environment to become more dynamic as several high-profile events could be exploited to justify acts of violence against a range of possible targets. Lovely. And in case you aren't already, then strap in now. The hearings begin tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern to be exact. You'll be able to watch them happen almost everywhere. On network television, ABC, CBS, NBC, on cable news, CNN and MSNBC. Yeah, notably, Fox, not news, is missing from that list. They won't be carrying the hearings live, I guess confirming that Fox is not a news channel. The first two witnesses have been announced. On Thursday night, we'll hear from U.S. Capitol Police Officer Caroline Edwards and documentary filmmaker Nick Quested, who was embedded with the Proud Boys leading up to and during the insurrection. Others who've been invited by the January 6th panel to appear for live testimony, former acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen, his former deputy Richard Donahue. The panel also wants Trump's former White House counsel Pat Cipollone to appear, and Steve Engel, a former DOJ attorney. We'll have to wait for it to unfold. Behind the scenes, the panel's heard from the Secret Service agent who was closest to Trump during the January 6th attacks, Robert Engel, the special agent in charge on January 6th. He was responsible for protecting the president, quote, from socks on to socks off, the whole workday. And because of that, Engel has detailed insight on a key select committee focus, how the Secret Service handled the day's events. Turning towards Ukraine, President Volodymyr Zelensky warned yesterday that Ukraine may face the most difficult winter in more than three decades, as Russia's invasion brings the threat of an energy crisis on top of everything else. Meanwhile, Ukrainian troops are still locked in fierce street battles in the eastern Donbas region, and several other cities are also facing a new slew of air assaults. Russia is also claiming it has opened a land corridor to Russian-occupied Crimea, now allowing civilians and goods to pass through the territory. And finally, the Supreme Court is done hearing cases for this term. They just still have to issue their opinions in 30 as yet undecided cases. Some of them carry huge ramifications, including the idea of open carry nationally, immigration, climate change, healthcare, church v. state, and abortion rights, among others. They usually announce the opinions 2 to 3 mornings each week, beginning at 10 a.m. sharp. You can get great coverage from SCOTUSblog.com. And this morning, well, they announced just one. It had to do with Fourth Amendment excessive force claim on the U.S.-Canadian border. So 29 opinions still to come. Stay tuned. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.